It seems like there is nothing our gut microbes can't do. This incredibly useful population of bacteria takes up its place shortly after birth, and as far as we know, changes little in composition through our lifetime. The ecosystem inside of us serves to help us digest and fight out disease. But can it help others fight disease as well? Sarah Crespi discussed the feasibility and effectiveness of fecal transplant with Jaap de Vriese. De Vriese starts with a quick description of how one goes about transplanting feces and why.
Usually the patient is already receiving antibiotics. You stop that like 1 or 2 days before the treatment. And then the person gets a bowel lavage. There's some sort of water used to get as much as possible out of the bowel. And the donor comes in and gives his stool, and it's been used through a tube. It can be done through a nasal tube, which ends up at the distal part of the first part of the small intestine. And there's also the colonoscopy, which is used from the other side. And there's also enemas, sort of a balloon, which you can use it at home as well.
Okay. Do they actually, purify things in any way when they do this?
They use some water with salt, like saline, and they use it in a blender to sort of mix it, and so that it can be used and it's not too thick. But it's not sort of, there's some small filtering going on as well. And there's also nowadays some attempts to sort of standardize it and make sort of to freeze it and later use it in a later instance.
So fecal transplants have actually been around for a long time. How did this ever come into anyone's head as a way to treat disease?
Well, they have been around very long, the fecal transplants. And there were some reports from China from the 4th century already. And there was this Chinese doctor. He was called Ge Hong. Now, at that time, of course, he didn't know about bacteria, but he might have had some sort of a gut feeling about health and sort of an unhealthy person or unhealthy animal might be cured by giving him the stool of someone else. And later there's some anecdotal evidence from other periods, like in the 17th century, it was used in cows, and that's still common practice, actually, in treating chickens. Then after the Second World War, there was the uprising of all these infections and also of resistance to antibiotics. And then in 58, there was already the first case of 4 cases were treated by a surgeon called Ben Eisenman. And he treated 4 patients with a sort of infection in the guts. And then later, nothing really happened because antibiotics were coming and, well, they were doing well. But then recently, for 10 years, it's been a lot more important to find alternatives to antibiotics. So that's created a revival of this technique.
What kind of disorders might a fecal transplant be useful for?
Well, the thing that's used for the most currently, it's recurrent infection of a pathogen called Clostridium difficile. That is a pathogen that usually, it can live in your healthy gut, but it becomes dangerous when you're, for instance, treated with antibiotics and your whole gut flora or the whole ecosystem is sort of disturbed. It takes over and then it creates inflammation. And it's very difficult to treat and it can be deadly even. It's been proven now that it can be very effective to use fecal transplant to shut down this infection and this Clostridium bacteria. So there's other indications like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. Those are both inflammatory bowel diseases. That's quite straightforward. But it goes further, and it might even treat autism, depression, metabolic syndrome, and Parkinson's disease, and even acne is being described as being cured by fecal transplant.
So I guess we should take a step back and talk about what a fecal transplant is and how scientists think it might actually work.
Yeah, so it starts with the whole idea that the gut is filled with all these different species of bacteria, in particular the large bowel. And when it's in balance, it's fine, and it interacts with the body, and it's fermenting the food, and then it's fine. But when it's sort of out of balance and can all have different causes, like antibiotics, then things go wrong and these bacteria might take over and there are some toxins that end up in the body and can cause all these different problems. And the whole idea of a transplant is that you sort of rebalance it by introducing a new balanced ecosystem with all these different species that are in a healthy gut.
So far, most of the reports on the effectiveness of these transplants as a treatment have been anecdotes, one doctor doing it to several patients, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been some randomized control trials and more in the works. How have those fared so far?
Well, there is one recent trial that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2013, actually this year. It was done by a group in Amsterdam. They wanted to treat like 150 or around that number of patients with a recurrent Clostridium infection, difficile. So half of them would be treated with this fecal transplant, and the other groups, two other groups, one with vancomycin and the normal treatment, and the other one was a vancomycin and a bowel lavage, taking away everything. The trial was stopped after 43 patients were treated because the effect was so huge and the difference was so enormous, like a 90% cure in the treatment group of fecal transplants and like one-third in the other groups. So that was a very strong result. But it was not blinded, so there could be some placebo effects in there, but, well, it's not very important, this placebo effect, because it's such a strong disease.
I was going to say, how would you do a blind fecal transplant
trial? Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's what they also do in other trials that are running with other indications now, that they take the stool from the patient and from a donor, and then the patient receives a stool from the donor or from his own donation. The researcher from Amsterdam was telling me that some people afterwards were saying, oh, I'm sure that was not my own stool because it smells differently. Mm-hmm. But actually, they weren't always right because, well, it just changes.
All right. So in the meantime, while these trials are going on and researchers are trying to sew up the evidence, people are actually trying this at home. There are, you know, do-it-yourself videos online. What kind of dangers might do-it-yourselfers face, and are there any regulations for this?
There haven't been any notions of strong or heavy side effects or even things really go wrong, but there are risks. Well, you might transmit a virus that you don't know of. There might be some parasites or pathogens that are not giving any symptoms to the donor, but they might give problems in the receiver, in the patient, because it's already weak in person. Sort of a short-term effect. And on the long term, there's always correlations with all these diseases like cancer that might be correlated with certain compositions of microbiota in the gut. And when you transplant a composition of a healthy donor that might later develop this, then you could also develop this in the long term. Normally, in a clinical setting, the donor is screened for all these things. But when you do it yourself, it's a difficult thing. For at home, there's no real regulation because, well, it's not really easy to check this. So.
Right. There are actually some groups out there looking to avoid the hazards that you described earlier, maybe getting gut microbiota that work for the healthy person but don't work well in the sick person, or transmitting viruses or other unwanted beasties. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do this by only introducing specific strains of bacteria.
Yeah.
How might that work? Is it different than probiotics?
Yeah, it's different than probiotics because the usual probiotics that you can buy in the shops, those are lactobacilli, for instance. Those are strains that don't really stay in the gut. They can enter and they pass, and then after a couple of days, they're gone because they don't colonize the gut. And the strains that you're interested in for these applications, those are anaerobic bacteria that don't want air or oxygen. They stay, and so they're more or less stronger, so to say. That makes it more difficult to culture them in the lab because then you need all these facilities without oxygen. And a lot of these bacteria have been very difficult to culture. But now, recently, there's some new techniques coming up that make this possible. And there are some initiatives that aim to select sort of a smaller set of strains that are not dangerous, and they might be good for sort of introducing the new balance. There's this Canadian initiative with 33 strains. It's called Repopulate. Very nice name. But it was actually halted in 2011 by the Health Canada, the Canadian FDA, because it's sort of regarded as synthetic, and then they had to enter the whole drug protocol. There's also another initiative. It's called Rebiotics, and they are now sort of going through a trial to test a larger set of like more than 100 strains.
Great. All right. Well, Jaap de Vriese, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Jaap de Vriese is a freelance science writer based in the Netherlands. He writes about the promise of poop this week.